Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's high noon on a long weekend. Thank you so much for tuning into Nation Radio. We have Oilers stories of yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and major hockey news around the world. And lots could happen in the next 2 hours, and lots will as well. We've got all kinds of stories to follow. Looking forward to free agency, Justin Schultz, Ryan Smith, and more. Your questions always welcome. Email questions to nationradio at theteam1260.com or Twitter at @itsnationradio or lowtide _. Also grab questions from the comments at Oilers Nation and Low Tide as well. Our guest today, Tom Lynn from Veritas Hockey. Lynn's background in the hockey business makes him an ideal guest to have on the eve of free agent frenzy. We'll talk about Justin Schultz there a little bit too. Bruce McCurdy from Cult of Hockey will be by. He's been at the Oilers development camp all week, and he'll share his insight on that as well as give us thoughts on the Oilers summer so far. Kent Wilson from the Nations will talk specifically about the Flames, but much else as well. I'm looking forward to finding out what he thinks of Jay Feaster's week. A kind of an uneven week. I think Jay Feaster looked at all the free agents and said, I was going to sign my own. That'll be better. And Cam Charron from Leafs Nation, managing editor. He was at the draft last week. We had so many guests, we didn't have a chance to get him on. So I want to talk about Toronto at the draft. And Morgan Riley was just on with the Pipeline guys. We'll talk about that too. And a few things from the Big Smoke, including, I mean, you know, we heard they were in the Justin Schultz sweepstakes as well, although it doesn't sound like it today. You never know with this stuff. You know, he could backtrack, change his mind. And Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun. Jones had the Kruger story, I think, before anybody did. And we'll talk about that, Schultz and the Oilers in free agency, and Ryan Smith as well. So let's get to it. Last week, it was Nail. This week, it's something approaching Bieber fever. It isn't Justin, but it's Schultz. And he'll tell the world in just a few minutes, as we understand it, where he's heading. And I was going to say when the white smoke emerges from the chimney at the top of the Sistine Chapel. But Jim Matheson tweeted out the joke. He stole my stuff, man. So Justin Schultz at sometime this afternoon is going to go outside. If he sees his shadow, he comes to Edmonton. If not, we don't know. So there you go. Anyway, it'll come up in the next few hours. We understand that it'll be before free agency, which happens our time, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. So if we don't have it, we'll have it later. We promise you that. The Oilers are in it. We know that from Andy Strickland and various other sources on the internet and across the hockey world. And we understand Ottawa is in it, and then maybe a third team that is unnamed. So how's that for blanket coverage, right? We wait. Connor, if he does choose Edmonton, we should have like the Hallelujah Chorus or something like that ready to roll. And then if he doesn't, I'm going to need a copy of that George Carlin, 7 words you cannot use on radio, because I'm going to have to know which ones to stay away from if that happens. Last week at this time, we were talking about a Terry Jones article that put a few things together in regard to the Oilers head coaching situation. He added it all up, and the answer was Ralph Kruger. Good reporting by Jones. We know that came about this week. The world's most famous European hockey coach from Manitoba is now the head coach of the Edmonton Oilers. The kids drafted last weekend took part in the Oilers development camp in Sherwood Park, going on, as a matter of fact, right now, as I understand it, or just wrapping up. Lots of positives on Nail and Oscar Klefbom. Everybody's talking about how smooth he is, and that'll be interesting, because if he does come to camp in the fall, as has been rumored, and he plays well, you never know. The word was he was going to stay in Färjestad, but that could change. It's a fluid situation on the Oilers' blue line. Zharkov, others, will talk about that with two people, Terry Jones and Bruce McCurdy here this afternoon. Free agent Sunday hits tomorrow at 10 o'clock. The Oilers are unlikely to be as active as they were a year ago. If you remember, most of us, I certainly felt they wouldn't be that active. And then they brought in Eric Bélanger, Ben Eager, Darcy Hordichuk, Cam Barker, and Corey Potter as free agents, and then they traded for Andy Sutton as well. So it was a very, very busy day last July 1st, and I suspect we'll have less free agent signings, but maybe a few deals, and there's a possibility of Ryan Smith getting signed. I understand Mark Spector tweeted out this morning that the Oilers and Smith are expected to conclude negotiations today. That doesn't mean they're going to sign him, but there's been an effort, there's a push on, and signing Ryan Smith would solve you know, a few problems for this Edmonton Oilers team. Oilers signed David Musil to his entry-level deal. He'll be going back to the Vancouver Giants of the WHL, very likely, unless he makes the Edmonton Oilers in the fall. And with the kind of defense we're expecting them to bring in, you know, I believe that he'll be a WHL player and a Giant in the fall. Some of the names that I'd like to see from free agency: Ryan Smith, Daniel Winnick, good two-way player. Shane Doan is on, apparently going to be on the market. And among defensemen, Matt Carl, Jason Garrison, and we wait. But it's going to be a very, very interesting 2 hours. We'll keep you updated on Justin Schultz and all that's going down there and any other breaking news, trades, signings, because we're 24 hours away from free agency. There might be some late signings and maybe some trades of rights and contracts. It's 12:05. We're joined now by Tom Lynn, a player agent and former assistant general manager and general manager. Can talk about all sides of free agency in the draft. Tom, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, but it's a busy day this year, and there's a lot of different things going on than I think a regular year, so we're just trying to figure it all out.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time, and let's get right to it, starting with the question that has been sent to me most about free agency, and I'm going to have you answer it. How can teams possibly sign players so quickly after the start of free agency? We know that you can't mention a player, but is it sort of assumed that there's an opportunity there for there's maybe a good fit for one team and one player, and maybe you've done a little bit of groundwork without mentioning the name? Or how does that work?
Well, first of all, you know, and this might be addressed in collective bargaining, I don't know, it's a big issue, but in football and some other sports, they have a shopping period before UFAs can sign. That would be so beneficial in hockey, because how many times the player play for a team his whole career, and he's 27, 28, or 29, he hits the free agent market July 1, he's expected to sign, you know, to get his money and get to a place, he's going to sign a 5 to 10 year deal, and just on based on a phone call, because you're not allowed to contact teams beforehand. So you haven't talked to them, you haven't talked to the coach, you haven't visited the city, and you jump right in. So it's unique to hockey. The players have to make some very important decisions, and teams do too, sometimes based on a 15-minute phone call. So given that, yes, and for the players on the agency side, we go through the teams with them in depth, you know, depth charts, prospects, who's going to sign, what the city's like, you know, all the different parts of what can happen in quality of life before that day, because you might get a team that calls and says, you got 15 minutes to decide, and that's all you have.
It does sound arcane, and is it just a matter of the hockey always saying, well, we've always done it that way, and never really looking at the process properly?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, free agency really bloomed in the 90s, late 90s, when we got those big deals just after 2000, the Bill Guerin-type deals, where it was so much about the money because salaries were going up so rapidly, I don't think people were maybe as focused on quality of life. You know, how many times did we see free agency set records each year, 99, 2000, 01, 02, 03? Then you got to that last collective bargaining session, and with the year lost, everyone was just focused on the numbers. So this came up. So really, it's been more of an afterthought for that reason. Now that players are signing deals based on where they want to play and quality of life, quality of team, chance to win and all that, it would probably make more sense going into the future.
Now, for an agent or for an agency, you have a group of players who may have interest right off the hop. Is it a matter of juggling five or six players, or is there one agent for each player, or how does that work internally?
Well, generally, you try to send some emails with those questions explained to teams on the morning of July 1, just as it starts. So, you know, if you want player X, call this number, player Y, call this number. It was tougher on the team side because you may be looking at forwards, goalie, and defense. You have your list in the pro scouting room, and you're splitting up to call a vast number of people, and you're trying to send emails at the same time to stay in some of them. On the player side, you have anywhere from, you know, in a big year, 3 to 7 players who are really getting July 1 interest. In that case, you can kind of take the calls. I mean, worst-case scenario, if you have a player get a few offers, you know, you just try to put them off. The worst part, frankly, is a few teams have a predilection towards making quick offers, meaning they wait, and then they say, all right, here's the offer, but we've got to know right away, or we're going to offer to somewhere else. That's where the pinch comes.
Yeah, and that does happen, right, because that does appear to be some of the teams maybe don't go, they might not tick off the number one or two or player available, but they might go three or four and say, you know, we want to make this deal now, we want to close it out because this is the move we want to make, and you've got to go to your guy and say, do you want to do this or do you want to wait? So it kind of makes it more difficult because you have to make that decision in an instant.
Yeah, and it's almost always the team that does that. I mean, I look back even when the Y was pursuing and Matt Cullen and Mark Parrish, you know, prices were climbing, getting late in the day. Other forwards were signing. We were facing the prospect of not landing a top forward. So you have to make that call. You have to say, all right, yes or no, turn it around. And often the agents, you know, we try to buy some time. Well, he went to the supermarket, or I'll have to reach him. But oftentimes, and Nashville does this a lot because they figure, you know, we'll find out if the guy wants to play here. You've got 15 minutes. And if we don't hear, you know, we're offering it to Joe Smith.
How impressive or how much weight would an agent and a player, I guess it would depend on the player, but if you were sitting with a mid-level free agent and a team calls and offers maybe a year or two longer or possibly, you know, 500 grand more per year, or maybe, as we've seen happen this week, some kind of a no-movement clause, does that spruce things up? Does that make it more attractive for the player, the more security?
Well, you know, depending on the situation, yes. You don't have too many Kirby Puckets out there who will sign one-year deals every year just to maximize their value. But, man, it really depends on the player. Some guys are so focused on the hockey and don't want to necessarily commit as a young free agent for the rest of the career somewhere. But essentially, if you're 28 and you sign anything more than a five-year deal, you're thinking, you know, this is my career. So that's part of it. The no move and no trade clauses are helpful because obviously they can be waived, but that way a player doesn't sign, say, for a discount with a top team, and then within a year be traded to a bottom team, and now he's at a discount for a bottom team. So if a team hopes to land a player, you know, at a good number, what they consider, the player considers a discounted number, then yes, they have to give them that, because otherwise they could, you know, trade him to a bottom team next week.
In conversation with Tom Lynn, a player agent and former assistant GM and general manager in the NHL, this usually happens with goaltenders, or has in the recent past. How great is the fear of being the player who doesn't have a team to play for as a starting goaltender? And that does happen sometimes when you're the last guy and you the dance is over and you're standing up and everybody else is sitting down with a job. Is that a pressure too for specifically for goaltenders, but also for position players?
You know, it's not as much for position players. For goaltenders, you know, historically it wasn't because they were in such demand going back. But now, you know, in recent 3 years, young goalies are kind of the vogue right now. And many of them are playing well, so the more veteran guys, like the Vokoun situation, needed to realize that. You know, the funny thing is, there's not necessarily a lot of defense positions open, but there are a lot of defensemen. Teams seem more willing to sign extra defensemen and say, you know, especially with the middling guys you talked about, if you have a four or five defenseman, there are a number of teams who will still sign him for good money because you don't know how things are going to shake out, injuries, what have you. And in forward, for most part, for forwards, unless you're a specialized guy, you know, like Owen Nolan during the end of his career, guys trying to hang on, they do get signed. So I don't think they worry about it as much. This summer will be interesting because of the CBA ending and potential, you know, teams doing anything differently past July. You might get a sense of guys wanting to sign before it gets too far into free agency until later July.
Do you, and I know it's not your player, so in regard to Justin Schultz, is this something that where there's a loophole and the player gets free agency long before, even limited free agency, long before the CBA expects him to? Do you feel like this is the way of the future, where teams will sort of interview or almost apply to the player for the opportunity? Or is that something that should and will be reserved for people like Brad Richards?
Well, you know, it really isn't a loophole. It was a planned part of the CBA, because if you think about the difference between junior and college players, if you were a junior player and had not signed, you can go back in the draft, or if you're old enough, you become free as well. This loophole, as it were, was designed so college players, basically teams get their rights for 4 years and sometimes five if they go to prep school after being drafted. So saying to the college players, all right, just because you were drafted 32nd overall and the guy next year is drafted 33rd overall from Owen Sound, doesn't mean you're tied to that team for 5 years. You know, after a certain period of time, you can give them notice. You leave school, you give notice, and then you can become a free agent. But it's really no younger than a junior free agent would be. It's just being celebrated so much because of the status of the player.
Let's quickly, before we let you go, Tom, just talk a little bit about the draft and the craziness there. You know, we were told before this year's draft that the depth was a little different and there would be some selections that surprised us, and it really did happen. I think number 10 overall was a little bit of a surprise. As an agent, how was that experience? Did you have a situation where you felt some players would go in a certain area and didn't, and vice versa?
Well, I would say yes. Not as much at the top. I mean, Kevin Bay's pick there was, you know, slightly surprised, but his stock rose a lot in the prior 2 weeks. So people were slotting him kind of privately in the 15 to 20 range. Obviously, Calgary's pick was a surprise to a number of people. So, you know, that would work out. But I wouldn't say the top was too surprising. What surprised me was the number of Europeans drafted late. Mm-hmm. You'd seen that go down in recent years. And people looking more toward the North Americans and a lot of high schoolers, college, junior players drafted. But, you know, I saw a number of players, especially from Minnesota, and even, for example, Cody Corbett with the Edmonton Oil Kings, ranked 70th overall by Central going into the final. You know, those guys not being drafted and a host of Europeans being drafted from secondary teams. I don't have a finger on that yet, you know, why it happened, but it's going to be an anomaly looking back in a couple of years to see how that works out.
What do you mentioned Corbett, and let's use him as an example, because, you know, here's a player who was draft eligible, didn't get drafted, and that is unusual. I mean, I think most people felt he would be selected. Is that something that as an agent you have to handle and let him know that there's a lot of what we might call overages or 19-year-olds and then 20-year-olds getting drafted far more than in the past as well?
Right. I mean, the tough thing is I had a couple players in that position, Minnesota high schoolers, two of them ranked by Central who should have gone. And you have to tell them it's a tough thing. You're disappointed you didn't get drafted, but number one, it's the best thing for you. In other words, you know, the chances of you playing another year being drafted higher and improving your stock are great. And on the off chance you became a free agent after a few drafts, you know, that's the best situation. You don't need to pick a team to go to that has the least depth and you can make it to the NHL the quickest. You know, I always tell them, you could be a great, great, great defenseman, but if you signed with the Wild and they have six great defensive prospects like they do now, you're in tough.
Yeah.
Like Shea Genoway. So the situation is they're better off having not be drafted, but emotionally it's a tough thing to break through.
Tom, we know you're busy, and I thank you so much for your time. Have a great weekend. Enjoy, and we reserve the right to call you back here over the summer.
All right, thanks. Take care.
Thanks very much to Tom Lynn, player agent, former assistant general manager, and general manager from Veritas. You can check it out, Veritas. They're on Twitter, and they have a web page as well, and they can pass along information if you are a young player and interested in an agency. Definitely, Tom Lynn is a capable guy and an interesting fellow, and we so much thank him for his time, because I imagine every agent involved with the National Hockey League right now is on, in the words of Kramer, no sleep. And probably won't be until about, I don't know, Sunday night at midnight, maybe catch a couple of hours. It's going to be a crazy time. There's no doubt about it. Now, as we mentioned at the top of the show, there's lots going on. The Justin Schultz situation has not, Connor, he hasn't let us know who he's signing with yet. So, we'll wait for that. And then, we also have, some interesting information on Ryan Smith, and we'll get to Bruce McCurdy as well from the Cult of Hockey. He's been down at the development camp, and we'll find out exactly what's going on there and who he was impressed by. We're going to take a break and be right back right after this.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 12:22, Saturday of a long weekend. This is Nation Radio. We have Edmonton Oilers stories of the past, present, and future. And actually, I think we're covering all of them today, which is good. Tom Lynn, our first guest, really enjoyed that. Later on today, we have Kent Wilson, Cam Charon, Terry Jones, and Connor. We have Andrei Osajenko coming on between 1:40 and 2 as well.
Yeah, we do.
Writer for Oilers Nation, and he has had some great input for us on the Russian kids, and that would include, obviously, Neil Yakupov, but also Zharkov and Grigorenko, so we'll get some great information from him before 2 o'clock today. 12:22, joined now by Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey. How are you, sir?
Good afternoon.
So you're down at the rink. You've been down in Sherwood Park. You've been checking out all the prospects?
Yes, sir. 4 days out of four so far.
There you go. Overall impressions, Bruce, give me the big canvas look.
Well, the big canvas look is, I'm sure, liking the group of defensemen. And it's so hard to tell, of course, in some of these little drills that just focus on this skill or that skill or the other. But today they actually had an actual scrimmage. They played real hockey for a few minutes for the first time all week. And the D-men kept catching my eye with, they just, you know, they looked like hockey players, is the oversimplified version of it.
So one of the things that I've read you mention on Cult of Hockey and also on Twitter is in regard to Oscar Klefbom and how smooth he looks. I think the next question there is, how would he compare to past viewings of players like Jeff Petrie, maybe at the same level? How far along is he? And if he comes to training camp in the fall, would you be surprised?
I'm pleasantly surprised if he came to training camp. I have a feeling that, I mean, last year we never saw him at rookie camp because he was already playing over there in Sweden. So that would mean a break from that, the plan, which of course he's under contract over there for another year. I'm not entirely sure that he's ready yet, but he sure got the skill set, and he has all the bearing and composure of a top-notch defenseman. He's a very impressive player to watch, a beautiful skater for starters.
Is he, like, he can make a pass and take a pass? He can make that nice headman pass well?
Well, he can. Today in the scrimmage, he tried to force a couple through the middle that didn't go anywhere, which kind of had me looking skyward. But what 19-year-old defenseman do you know that hasn't done that a time or two?
Or
200.
Yeah, or in Potvin. They were about it. Maybe coffee. Fadun, he's a guy that we were concerned about, that horrible incident that happened in the fall last year in training camp and really cost him a year. And I know it's difficult because how can you compare him? We didn't really see him that much last year. But how does Taylor Fadun look?
Well, I actually had a chance to interview him today, and I'll be throwing up that interview on the Cult of Hockey a little bit later on. He's feeling that he's getting back towards where he was. The unfortunate thing for him was his big advantage, I think, on the group was his maturity. Being 23, he was, 1 to 4 years ahead of that pack of developing young defensemen. He just lost that whole year, which was a terrible blow. But he certainly focused. He described his physiotherapy that he went through. Holy mackerel, what a nightmare. And he's certainly focused on getting his hockey career back on track. He felt like he was really close, I think, last year. To possibly at least making the team out of training camp. And, in the little drills and so forth that you see, he certainly knows what he's doing back there, that's for sure. And today in the scrimmage, he did show a real nice burst of speed going through the neutral zone and jumping up into the play, which was encouraging to see as well.
Kyle Bigos, I've had a couple of buddies out there just DM me on Twitter and say the guy blocks out the sun. He's a monster, eh?
251 pounds he's listed at in the program. He is 35 pounds heavier than any other prospect in the camp. Cam Abney weighs in at 216, and he's a monster, and he's 35 pounds lighter than Bigos. I keep thinking Bigos should change his name to Humongous. He is mammoth, and he does have some skill. And actually, I was more encouraged from him in the scrimmage than I have been in some of the piecemeal workouts. Some of the hockey sequences that he showed were quite nice today.
Any other defensemen really catch your eye aside from Klefbom and Bigos, and who else did we mention there? Fadun?
Several of them. Brandon Davidson, who has come in leaps and bounds from where he was 2 years ago after being drafted. I've been at all the summer camps since then. And I know I'm no technician when it comes to judging hockey players, skating stride and so on. But he flows with the play, and especially his lateral mobility is just far ahead of it. It used to be he thought the game well, but he had trouble getting from A to B and enough time to be effective. And he's made huge strides in that. I know Billy Morris and company had made that a major focus of his particular recipe for his development plan, and he's been following it. He also is a very focused, real good kid too, Brandon Davidson, and he's another guy like Fadun that I personally am really rooting for, just because he's coming from sort of a hard luck story in some ways that he's turning into a positive.
From the forward group, I know from reading you this week that Neil Yakupov is the third in a line of elite, ridiculously talented forwards that it would include Taylor Hall and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in the last couple of years. This guy's shot is something to see.
Well, it's actually something to listen to rather than see, because it's a bullet. And he got one go yesterday on a one-on-one that I wrote about that. He just came in on the goalie with a little bit of speed up. And he just shrugged his shoulders from the ringette line, atop of the circles there, and bang, it went off right off the joint between the goalpost and the crossbar. And the goalie never moved until the puck was coming back past him the other way. And the whole, you could hear the arena gasp, right? It's one of those ones where the whole fan, everybody in there was sort of going, oh my goodness, what a rocket. And his his physical skills are really exceptional. He seems a little bit erratic. Today he had a so-so day. He wasn't making things happen, and it was going wrong for him, and he was kind of struggling a little bit. But, again, he's an 18-year-old kid.
What about the kid Mraz, the Edmonton Oil King? We saw him play and play more as the season went on. Is he at camp, and how's he looking?
He is at camp. He is one of six players with connections to the Edmonton Oil Kings who are at camp. He is looking like... It's hard to even describe. There's so many... there's so many players out there. He's looking like one of the pack.
Okay.
The skilled players that are standing out are either the smaller guys that are more abundantly skilled, or the older guys that have been around for a while. He looks like a kid at his first camp. And he's holding his own. He's doing all right. He's caught my eye in a good way at times, and not so good at other times. He's going to be a project, and I don't think there was any thought otherwise right from the moment he was drafted.
And Judger Kara, if I said that right, I sure hope I did.
I hope so, too. I keep hoping to catch him for an interview, and that's going to be my first question.
Yeah, exactly. In reading online and talking to a few people, this is a guy who was well thought of, although he didn't show up in the McKenzie draft rankings. This is a guy who is pretty highly touted, and he closed late on the draft rankings, and it looks like he's a player.
Yeah, he was the list that did get him all said things like sleeper pick. And I got an little bit inside from Ben Berland, the guy who posts on your Low Tide blog, his crazy coach who lives up there in Prince George, and he'd seen him play.
Mm-hmm.
And he was super impressed with the kid, with his family, with his background, and just said, he's an exceptional student. He's got some real solid foundations outside of hockey. And he's grown from a 5'5" runt that tried to make the Spruce Kings in the BCHL 2 years ago, and went from being an afterthought to making the team and signing the sheet 2 days into camp. And he's played 2 years there, and he really came on gangbusters. He scored close to 90 points, I think, last year. And he's big. He's got power in his stride. I wouldn't say he's fast, but there's a real sort of crunching sound to his stride. And that's a work in progress as well. If he's come that far in the last 2 years, it'll be another 2 or 3 or even 4 years maybe before we see him on the cusp of cracking the Oilers. But the arrows seem to be pointing the right way on that kid.
And before we move on and ask you a little bit about Justin Schultz, any of the other forwards impress you?
Well, the Jones twins... the problem there, of course, is that they really come as a package, and I think that the sum is greater than the parts. And there's not going to be too many lines in the NHL with two guys that are 5'9 and 170. So they're fighting an uphill battle, but boy, do they have skill and chemistry. So there's something to like there. The guy that keeps catching my eye is also. Probably going nowhere in the pro game in a sense. That's Brett Ferguson, but boy, he's just a hockey player, and he's got the he showed really well in the scrimmage when they started playing real hockey, that he was jumping into the right places and getting in the way when the other guys had the puck, being generally effective out there. And this guy Tobias Reeder, that guy is a real player to watch. He'll be back in Kitchener this year, but if he makes anywhere near the kind of progress this year that he made last year after being drafted in the middle rounds by the Oilers, I think they may well have gotten themselves a steal with that player.
We're in conversation with Bruce McCurdy from Cult of Hockey at the Edmonton Journal. Bruce, while we've been talking, Bob McKenzie has tweeted out that Toronto and the Rangers are out of the Justin Schultz sweepstakes, leaving, I believe, Edmonton, Ottawa, Vancouver, and Minnesota, I think, as the four teams that are still in it. Have you had a chance to look? I've been reading a little bit about Schultz beyond what we knew at the beginning. And do you have any opinion about how this guy might be able to come in and play at the NHL level, whether that's a stretch or do you think he'll be able to do it?
Well, we've seen guys come out of 3 years college and into the pro ranks in the past. I mean, here in Edmonton, we've seen guys like Matt Green and Jeff Petrie and Tom Gilbert do it with half year of minor league experience. And then when they come in, they're they're fairly ready. There's still a little bit, some rough edges. This guy is supposedly, I've never seen him play, but supposedly he's a cut above those guys. In fact, from the sounds of things, he's a cut above Bobby Orr, and we all should be getting real excited about him. It's, the whole thing is kind of out of hand. It brings to mind the craziness around a guy named Ray Stazak. You may remember Alan, back in 1985 when he was a hot thing out of college and a total free agent, and there was a big following, but nothing like this. I mean, this is crazy. All the teams want him, and it seems like every day there's one team that falls out of the running, and that's 20 headlines that are generated by that. And, I'm looking forward to it being resolved so we can either get excited about the guy or we can carry on and look at the next alternative.
If this is an Oilers question, if the Oilers do get Schultz and are lucky enough to be the team that he chooses, do you believe that shores up the blue line enough, or should Oilers fans be looking for this team to add another more veteran defenseman as well?
No, I'm convinced we need at least one, or Schultz or no Schultz, we need one solid, proven NHL-caliber backline player. Not necessarily a great player, but a 30-ish veteran that's been around and that you have to pay for, but you get what you pay for. And I don't see one more kid coming in and solving all of those problems that Oilers have experienced on the blue line the last number of years. So hopefully either by trade or by the rapidly dwindling group of unrestricted free agents, somewhere in there might be a player. We might have to do what Calgary did with Weidman and trade for a guy that is signed elsewhere but doesn't fit for either cap reasons or budget reasons or some reason where you don't necessarily have to give up a huge acquisition cost like they're talking about for, say, Keith Yandel, but somebody with not quite the big numbers but who delivers solid value for a decent contract. And hopefully, barring a miraculous recovery to 100% by Ryan Whitney, Oilers are going to need at least one more. I'd like to see two solid defensemen.
I couldn't agree more. And one final one for you in regard to Ryan Smith, who we understand Mark Spector tweeted out today that is in negotiations. Both sides are negotiating today and hoping to obviously come up with a good situation and have Ryan Smith return to the fold again with the Edmonton Oilers. Do you think that's a helpful player, or do you think the fading that he did in the second half was maybe a precursor of what we can expect?
Well, I think last year was kind of a perfect storm. I think he came out of the gate so hot. It was like lighting a match, and it was bound to subside. After, he was ridiculous for the first 20-odd games last year. He was an all-star. And I don't think he's that good, and I don't think he is as ineffective as the Smitty we saw in the second half of last year. But when the coach is riding a guy for 20, 22 minutes a night at 35 years of age, at a certain point, the energy supply is going to get sapped, and I think that's what happened. I would prefer to see him in a top nine as opposed to top six role, and either much more limited on both special teams or completely off one of the special teams, and try and get his ice time down. I think as a 16 or 17 minute a night guy, he's going to deliver solid value. I mean, he is a good player. He can play the tough minutes. He certainly got the experience, and we don't want to get rid of all of our experience.
Bruce, what can we read on Cult of Hockey from you, not just from the development camp, but other items here in the next few days?
Oh, boy. We got the big free agent day tomorrow. We've got interviews coming from camp. We have we've had stuff coming out of the Hall of Fame. It's just been crazy. This last 2 weeks, I've never seen anything quite like it, where they moved the development camp up into this season when everything else is already happening with respect to, end of one season and the beginning of the next. So we will be continuing our ongoing coverage. We'll probably have two or three Justin Schultz stories a day for the next couple of days at least, because he's a hot item right now. And then we'll gradually settle into a summer schedule where we can look player by player and take a, you know, kind of take a deep breath and have a better look at how the prospects shape up for next year once we have a better idea of the adds and subtracts that take place over the next few days.
And final one, anything in the Stars for the next few weeks that we might look forward to?
Nothing quite so exciting as what I explained to you last time with the Eclipse of the Sun, which was great. We had a great crowd at the Science Center for that, and the Transit of Venus, which unfortunately was clouded out at Edmonton entirely, but I saw it from Yellowknife. Those were pretty major events. Now we're just back to regular old, the sky is fantastic every day and every night kind of thing. The sun is active. Saturn's in a good place in the sky to view, and we're opening our observatory every night now, or every afternoon and evening for July and August, that people can freely drop into the Telos World of Science Observatory.
Now, I mean this in the nicest way. I consider you a friend, but it sounds to me like you've got two nerd train tracks going here with the hockey and the space. Is that correct there, buddy?
At least two. those are kind of the prominent ones. And these days, they're kind of overlapping a bit. Our Astronomy Society is hosting a national convention this weekend, so I'm on the host committee, and I'm trying to cover development camp, and I'm working with Oilers Analytics, and they're all kind of piling up a little bit. But I'm happy to take 15 minutes out of that to talk to you, Alan.
Bruce, thanks so much. We appreciate it, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too.
Okay,
bye-bye.
That's Bruce McCurdy from the Cult of Hockey, and great guy, and interesting information. We really thank him for the update from the development camp, and it is surprising that it happened so quickly, but I think it's a matter of the fall camp, or the pre-training camp, rookie camp is not going to happen, so they wanted to get everybody in here so they didn't have to come back, the college kids, and of course the European ones as well, so makes sense from that point of view. Now, it's 12:41, as I mentioned during that conversation with Bruce, Toronto and the Rangers are out, that's courtesy Bob McKenzie, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Edmonton, Vancouver, Ottawa, Minnesota are still in the running, and that may not be correct, but that's my understanding of it. So this is going to play out over time, you know, and we'll just give you an update as we can as we go throughout the afternoon. Now we have Cam Chiron, Terry Jones, and Kent Wilson on the way. Very busy afternoon, and Andrei Odzajenko as well will be on the air before 1 o'clock, and we'll talk about, you know, Yakupov and a few other players who were drafted in the NHL draft in 2012 last weekend, and get some insight there as well. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
12:47, all Justin Schultz all the time. No, not really, but we did have an update for you in the last segment. We'll pass it along again. Bob McKenzie has tweeted out that two teams are out, the Toronto Maple Leafs and New York Rangers, and four teams still in it, I believe. That would be Edmonton, Vancouver, Ottawa, and I suspect Minnesota. Could be wrong on that one, but gives you an idea about it's getting closer, and I don't know whether they're doing, you know, how they're doing the process or whatever, but we were told earlier in the day that it would be sometime this afternoon. So hopefully that'll come in the next hour and 15 minutes or so, because we have some really good music to play, and that's all all I really care about. And so we're going to look forward to that coming up before 2 o'clock, hopefully, on the Justin Schultz front. Now, though, we are joined by Nation's Overlord and the inspiration for the music that you're hearing right now, Mr. Kent Wilson, live from Calgary. Mr. Wilson, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Busy week in Calgary. Where would you like to start?
That's probably the Weidman signing is the place to start, I'd say.
Okay, let's start with Weidman. He's a guy that I felt that would be a good value for a team like the Oilers. Didn't think he'd get that far. I thought that he would sign. And although the contract is long and you know, glorious for Dennis Weidman, and there's a no movement clause, he is one of the, you can't argue, he's one of the better players who would have been available to fill that void in free agency.
Yeah, I mean, he does fill a need for the Flames on the back end. He's one of the better offensive defensemen that was available this year, and he's he's a capable top four guy, and the Flames let Scott Hannon walk, and they didn't really have anyone else internally to fill that role. So in terms of, you know, getting a guy who fills a need, yes, the contract, I'm not so crazy about, to tell you the truth. He's, you know, most of it's after he's 30 years old. There's a no movement clause. They gave him term, they gave him dollars, and they gave him the no movement clause, all three. And usually I like to only give out those contracts to guys who are going to be cornerstones on a team.
What kind of impact does it have on Jay Bouwmeester? Does that make him expendable, or do you see them keeping both players?
It's hard to say because they have a lot of money on the back end now with guys like Bouwmeester, Giordano, Babchuk, and Weidman. But Weidman certainly doesn't fill Bouwmeester's role. He's an offensive guy. He's maybe a top four guy. I talked to Washington writers who watched him all last year, and he can eat some minutes, but he's not going to shut anybody down. He's sort of a rodeo in his own end. Jay Bouwmeester is kind of the opposite for Calgary right now. He doesn't put up a lot of points. He's a little bit overpaid, but he is the big gun on the back in terms of defensive. He takes on all the tough minutes every night. So Weidman doesn't do that, and I wouldn't see him stepping into that role either.
The signing that I saw, and I went, people are going to, you know, make fun of it or think it's not a good deal, but I really like the Lee Stempniak signing. He's a guy who maybe gets overlooked a little bit, but he certainly Stempniaks people often.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. He can disappear for a couple games, and then he can turn up for another game, get a hat trick, or dipsy duel around Duncan Keith and score a highlight reel goal. He's a capable, you know, second, third line guy. He's probably good for 15 to 20 goals and 35 to 40 points, which isn't blowing anyone away, but it's nice to have depth players like that who are consistent and can move up the depth chart if there's any injuries.
I do like also the depth signing of Blair Jones. He's a guy who, even, I think you mentioned it, you put it very well on Flames Nation, even if he doesn't improve from where he is right now, that's a good signing, and it's not a very costly item, and he's definitely worthy of a roster spot.
Yeah, he was an interesting addition to the Flames last year. He only played 20-odd games because he got injured, but Brent Sutter was sort of moving him into a third-line, hard-minute center role right before he got hurt, so it'll be interesting to see if he can continue that sort of development under Hartley. And if he does, Flames have good value there. And if not, you know, $600K, he can be a fourth-line player, or he can go down to the AHL without much problem.
Well, he reminds me a little bit of Corey Potter on the blue line for the Oilers. If he ends up not making the team, his contract isn't so prohibitive that it's going to be a matter of suffering in the minor leagues.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Now let's talk a little bit about Corey Sarich. He was an interesting player for me because one of the reasons why I was in favor of the Oilers trading Andy Sutton at the deadline was I thought they could pick up a Sarich or a Sutton for around that price. Sutton's at $1.75 million. They went a little bigger and a little richer with Sarich. Your opinion on that move?
It just kind of confuses me, to tell you the truth. The Flames have a lot of bodies on the back end right now. Sarich was in and out of the lineup the last 2 years with the Flames, in part because he's always battling chronic injuries, and in part because he was a healthy scratch. Brent Sutter wasn't the biggest Corey Sarich fan. I mean, the good news for Sarich is he can play capably on the third pairing still, or he could up until this point. He's not overwhelmed in that role. The bad news is he can't move up because he's just so limited in terms of his mobility and offense. And he's going to be, you know, he's 34 years old. He's going to be 36 by the end of the contract. So at any point here, if he falls off at all, he's a seventh defenseman at best. So I don't know why the Flames felt they needed to lock him up especially for 2 years. He's physical, and I think that's what Feaster was using as the justification for bringing him back, because the Flames blue line isn't overly mean now, but it still doesn't make too much sense to me.
Just break in here and let you know that James Duthie is tweeting now that Justin Schultz is calling the teams who are on his short list one by one. The team that he has chosen will get the last call. So he's called Toronto and the Rangers now to say thanks but no thanks. And there's four more teams, as we understand it, including the Oilers, and we'll keep you updated on that. Back to Kent Wilson from the Nation's, talking a little bit about the Flames and their moves. One of the free agents that I like that the Flames apparently aren't going to sign is Ole Jokinen. Do you think do they have enough money to go out and sign another offensive player to replace him?
I was looking at it today, and they have probably $5 or $6 million to play with after they re-sign Michael Backlund and assuming Sven Berchi makes the lineup, then that's what they have to play with. So there are some options out there. There's the Augers of the world, Yuri Hudler, Shane Doan, guys like that. There's not a lot of really great options. I mean, P.A. Parenteau might be a type of guy to target, or even Daniel Winnick, who isn't offensive capable, but he's more of a David Moss type player who moves the play in the right direction. So I don't even know if they're going to target anyone on the UFA list at this point after all their moves, because they do have 12 forwards signed. They have 8 or 9 defensemen and 2 or 3 goalies. So we'll see if they're active at all.
So there's a possibility, because I was looking at the roster and I thought, you know, if your plan isn't to rebuild, you'll bring Berchi up. That's not such a bad move. There's, I count 10 defensemen.
Yeah.
So there's a possibility they're set.
Yeah, this could very well be the lineup that they go to battle with. There's still little rumors that, you know, Jay Bouwmeester might be shopped and Michael Backlund might be shopped, but it would surprise me if they could get value for those two guys at this point in their careers. So I don't know if it makes any sense unless someone comes along and offers them the moon.
I had a conversation with a buddy of mine about Bouwmeester. I felt he'd be a perfect fit in Edmonton for what they need, and he felt it would be a terrible deal. What do you think about Bouwmeester in Edmonton?
Bouwmeester would be a huge ad for the Edmonton Oilers, just because the blue line is still, I think, your weak spot. Especially, it would be nice if you added Schultz too at that point. But Bouwmeester, he is pricey, and that's all people can see, I think, these days, is his cap hit, and he's not scoring 40 or 50 points a year, but he just soaks up the tough minutes, and he makes everyone else's life a lot easier. And I think that's where the Oilers really lack, is a guy on the back end who can do a bunch of heavy lifting and free up ice time for everyone else.
Two real quick Nations items I wanted to talk about. We have Andrei Osajenko coming on in the last segment of our show today, talking a little bit about the Russians. Can you give me a little bit of background on him, how we acquired him? And I know he does great stuff. I love his stuff. And he's getting some inside scoops that nobody else is.
Yeah, he's a Toronto-based Russian accredited journalist. He was born in Russia. He's friends with some of our other writers, including Tom Drantz, who is the managing editor for Canucks Army, but actually lives in Toronto. So he kind of directed Andre to me, and we started, you know, just exchanging emails, seeing if he had a fit. And now with a lot of Russian players sort of popping up as prospects or players across the nation, he's been invaluable. Because as you say, he talks with their scouts and he talks with them quite frequently.
And also, and I believe it was Thomas Drantz, but for anybody who's wondering about Justin Schultz and what kind of player he is and what we can expect, NHL Numbers had a wonderful piece from Drantz, I believe, this week about Justin Schultz and what fans might expect from him as a rookie.
Yeah, the article is kind of looking at his potential to be a bust, just because it would be funny after all this pageantry if he kind of fell on his face next year. But Tom looked at a lot of comparable players who have come up recently, defenders, and Schultz topped the list pretty much every time in terms of NHL equivalency and stats like that. So it's, you know, anything can happen, but it looks like he's a pretty good bet to be a good player in the NHL.
Kent, thanks so much for this. We appreciate it.
Anytime, Alan.
All right. That's Kent Wilson, Nation Overlord. And, of course, you can read him on Flames Nation. NHL Numbers does great work and really part of that group of people. And I would include Jonathan Willis in there and Tyler Dallo and a few others who are making all of those numbers make sense. And we really appreciate their work. And Drantz and Chiron and Zona and all those guys do great work. It's 12:58 now. We're going to take a break. In the next hour, as I mentioned, Andrei Osajenko talking about the Russian contingent for the Oilers and others. We'll also have Cam Chiron from Leafs Nation and Hall of Famer Terry Jones on the way. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 3 minutes after 1 o'clock and the Justin Schultz show, and I'm only barely kidding. Getting tweets here as the afternoon rolls on. We knew Toronto and New York were out. The Rangers were out via Bob McKenzie on Twitter before we left. Now we find out from Spectre and also from McKenzie that Vancouver is out. So it's, Connor, it's Edmonton, Ottawa, Minnesota. I think that's what's left.
And then the mystery team.
There's a mystery team?
The mystery team.
Oh, my God.
The X Factor.
Mystery team. Who could that be? Not the Habs, but the Jets?
KHL?
Minsk. It's Minsk. Oh, well, we'll follow that story throughout the afternoon. Hopefully we'll get some closure here because, you know, afternoon is going to run into evening and I want to be on my deck, you know, having a glass of water here later and enjoying the evening. But we're joined now by Hall of Famer Terry Jones, and he's seen damn near everything. So this is no surprise to you, right, Terry?
I'm sorry?
You've seen almost everything in your years covering
this before. No. I know it's really remarkable. I would love to know a number of Edmontonians at this very moment who are glued to Twitter to find out about this, and they got to be getting excited with Vancouver because it's if that's indeed the case. Because I mean, that was a team he grew up on, the Kelowna, and his parents are supposed to be season ticket holders, and I think most people had them as one of the last two, and. With them out of there, I think Edmontonians got to be getting real excited now.
Well, as somebody who has been, you know, quick, and I'm talking about myself here, to be critical, I have to say that based on what we know of the Oilers' presentation, it was top drawer, and they went all out.
Well, that, you know, when we're sitting there at the press conference for the hiring of their new coach, it was, you know, there were questions to Steve Tambellini in that. In that gathering that kind of indicated that, you know, he didn't really know what was going on. And then a few minutes later, we find out that Kevin Lowe and Craig McTavish are in Toronto for the proceedings. And then all of a sudden, you've got Taylor Hall being brought into there. You hear about that. And then... you got Ralph Kruger and Tambellini apparently headed there, and then you find out that that these guys, you know, pushed what might be the ultimate selling point there, and had Wayne Gretzky and Paul Coffey both give him a call and tell him what it was like and what they think it will be like as a young player in a group that I guess you could say is surrounded by. A lot of lowercase Gretzky, you know, Messier, Curry, Anderson, and maybe this guy's Paul Coffey light too. So, you know, that had to, you know, you got to listen when Wayne Gretzky gives you a call. Come on, and well, especially if you're a right side defenseman, puck moving guy, Paul, you follow that up with Paul Coffey, and you know, I'm sure the kid was pretty impressed with that part of the day.
Absolutely. And I also think there's been a lot made of the Oilers possibly, you know, promising or guaranteeing playing time in the NHL. I don't think they have to guarantee anything, right? Terry, based on the depth chart, this kid has a glorious opportunity to come in here and play big minutes at even strength and on the power play.
Well, I think that's the thing, is you don't have to put it in a contract you know, whatever they're expecting him to do, because from everything I know, and that's the interesting thing with this, we're on the radio right now talking about a kid that neither of us has ever watched or, you know.
Heard of.
Yeah, I mean, well, heard of him, certainly. But, you know, when it came to Neil Yakupov, for example, you know, I watched him in the World Junior and had a couple of, you know, other opportunities here and there when it came to... the number two guy in the draft out of Everett, covered him over in the World Hockey Championships, saw him in the World Junior Championships, and also you know, the entire training camp of World Junior. So Ryan Murray I was totally familiar with, and of course when you were dealing with their other pick, which is that they were really, really looking at, which was Reinhardt. Well, you know, we all watched Griffin play with the Edmonton Oil Kings, so we knew we had a pretty good idea. I'm not saying we were Stu McGregor out there, but this guy, you're going by say-so, but it's as was the case with Yakupov, every scout I know is saying this guy can walk in and play in the NHL, and on the Oilers can walk in and be a top four defenseman, meaning probably number three or four to start his career whenever the next season starts.
Well, and it's funny because I was thinking about if Schultz ends up playing here, they make that trade for Nick Schultz, who's a stay at home type and a veteran guy. They've got Whitney and they've got Smead on the left side.
You're a radio guy, Shane. Okay, here goes the play by play.
So you've got all those guys.
We're going with first names here.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I barely know them, but and you've got all those guys. Then you make the selection of the forward. If the Oilers didn't know about this, the fait accompli was going to be the final decision, and they end up getting Schultz, they're going to look pretty brilliant based on what they did from the trade deadline in.
And the one thing you'd have to give the much maligned Steve Tambellini credit for, if this comes through, is he's got to be the luckiest guy in the history of hockey. I mean, he wins three lotteries, including the one from not from the 30th position, but from 29th position, and the timing to be involved in this situation if they get him. But hold it here. I mean, I haven't, if it's true that Ottawa's still in this thing and Minnesota is still in this thing, mm-hmm. I don't get either one of those. And I'm not sure, but I keep getting the sense that there's some team we don't know about in this thing. Now, for the life of me, I don't understand why Ottawa would be a consideration. And when it comes to Minnesota, when it comes to the college war situation around there, well, they're the enemy to the Wisconsin Badgers. Yeah. So I'd really wonder what their pitches were. There's got to be something there that we don't know about.
Well, Bob McKenzie is tweeting that there is a mystery team, too. And I mean, the teams that I have heard about are all the teams listed, and we know the three that are gone, Vancouver, Toronto, and the Rangers. So, whenever there's something like this, I say Detroit because they always do these kind of things. But
Calgary?
Well, there's a good. Oh man, it would be a long night in Edmonton, right?
Wouldn't it?
Remind me, I got to stop at the store on the way home, make sure that there's. So let's talk. We've talked about that enough. Let's talk about the Oilers. If they don't get Schultz, do you see them being very active in free agency or maybe by the trade route?
Well, my personal opinion is that the free agency thing, unless there's nothing wrong with taking your trip at the plate to with Suter and those guys, but I think that they're in a situation where what they really, really need to do here is wait on that. I'm going to say the Chris Pronger type and put you in that situation from. Previous to fill in that last piece, that A number one final piece of the puzzle, eat up a ton of minutes. Defenseman, one of the top four or five that are out there. The next time one comes up in free agency, either next year or the year after, I think that's when you put that piece in. This team, and you were alluding to it when you're talking to Bruce earlier. People talk about how bad the Edmonton defense is, but the situation is truly that they've got a lot on the shelf. There's some defensive players in the cupboard that just need time to develop, and I think you need to keep a spot or two up to keep those guys moving up, get a taste, go back down, work on what you found out, go back up, that sort of thing. And I think they've got enough assets now that they can put together a pretty good deal. To fill in some of their holes, and I think a significant percentage of the Oiler population would really like to see these guys get proactive in making a real smart hockey trade using the assets that they've put together in the last 4 years.
You make a great point there, and I'm gonna move it to forward here, and we're gonna talk about Ryan Smith and the possibility of him coming back. Last year, when he signed a few young players like Pajärvi and Hartikainen, got lost in the shuffle a little bit, ended up spending more time in the minor leagues, which is fine. But Ryan Smith is close to free agency here. Is this the drop off point where maybe you say to the new coach, you're we're not signing Ryan Smith, but we want you to develop these younger kids in that role?
Well, Smitty's a really interesting position. When he came here last year, I was, saying, this is terrific. The fan base, going through what they've been going through these last 3 years and in being the bottom of the barrel, deserved to have that feel-good story come back. And I think it was great for Smitty to come back. But I said, this is not going to end well whenever it ends. I don't. If Ryan Smith has got his head wrapped around it right now, that he comes back and that... you know, he transitions into a different part of his career to get some an extra 3-4 years on it. And I'm not talking about them all being here, but being a player that instead of playing, I don't know what he played last year, 19 minutes or whatever, that maybe goes down to about 16 or something like that, that isn't going to be on the first power play, that may take second games of back-to-back games off once in a while, those sort of things, and is more of a role player, quite frankly. I think there's a place for Ryan Smith here this year for sure, quite possibly next year, but I know there were times last year where Ryan wasn't when Ralph Krueger took over the power play last year and took it from 27th to 3rd in the NHL. One of the differences was Ryan Smith wasn't getting anywhere near the piece of action that he had or expected here when he came here. I think so. He's going to have to get his head wrapped around that if they go forward. But I honestly do hope they get a contract done short term. 1 year would be the best, but. To keep him an Oiler and give him a role in being a guy to help build that bridge to the future, because that's what they need right now, and he fits that bill, quite frankly.
So let's last year the Edmonton Oilers, I didn't expect them to do a lot free agency. They did a lot. They brought in Ben Eager.
Don't you wish they hadn't?
Yeah, they brought in Eric Bélanger, Eager, Cam Barker was brought in, and Corey Potter. Right at the end of the day, they made the trade for Sutton. One would imagine with the roster the way it is, they'll be less active in free agency. Right, they won't bring in five guys.
I don't see them doing maybe more than one move. Maybe. Two minor ones or something like that. I think the job there is for them to really come up with that big make sense trade to a team that's got an asset, particularly on defense, like a 3-for-1 type deal. I think that's there to be done.
Final one, and then I got one quick question to go back to the Schultz thing. But the Eskimos playing tonight. I married a Rough Rider fan, so I need the Eskimos to really win big tonight to make up for last night. Eskimo fans heading to the game. This is a different team, a different quarterback. Ricky Ray happens to be in town, as luck would have it. what's your feel about the game tonight?
Well, I'm expecting the Eskimos to win. Just because they have Ricky Ray, you have to take a look at the rest of the Argo lineup. And poor Ricky leaves here after playing the last 4 or 5 years with questionable offensive line and a lack of receiving depth, and ends up with the Argos with exactly the same two problems. I mean, their offensive line is open a big time questioning, and when Jason Barnes is your go-to guy instead of Fred Stamps, and the Eskimos, I thoroughly expect to have an excellent defense this year, and no quarterback, but an excellent defense, and at this time of year, defenses usually win.
All right, Jerry, I'm going to put you on the spot. Now, you're getting ready to write your article on Justin Schultz, and he's just signed with Anaheim. What's your lead there? If that were to happen after all of this...
Then I go to the football game.
I'm sure it won't happen, but that would be the ultimate kicker, right?
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things there is that his pick in the second round that year was Anaheim, but that pick originally belonged to the Oilers.
Yeah, it did. And that was
a neat twist if the Oilers signed him.
Yeah, that was the part of the Dustin Penner offer sheet or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think Tyler Myers ended up being the other one, but we won't talk about that. Terry, have a great afternoon, buddy. Thanks so much.
Okay, be good.
All right, that's Terry Jones from the Edmonton Sun, Hall of Fame writer. Of course, we have him on Team 1260 lots through the week, and for good reason, because he knows his stuff. And, you can call Terry Jones and ask him a question about 1979's draft, and he remembers it. And a steel trap memory. And we thank him for that, and we thank him for his information and his insight, and we'll have him on again very soon. Now, we've got a very busy 40 minutes here or so, hopefully full of Justin Schultz to Edmonton news. We don't have that yet. I'll give you the latest. Toronto, New York, and Vancouver are out. There's 4 teams apparently left, and according to everything we're reading on Twitter, he is calling the teams as their last man out. So the last call, the Yeah, the last team that gets the call will be the winner. So we're waiting and hoping like everybody else. And what a crazy day. I was just reading one of the guys that I follow on Twitter. He was getting on a flight in 30 seconds and didn't want to go. And I think that was from Pittsburgh, but I'm not sure. Okay. Cam Charron from Leafs Nation on the way. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
124, this is Nation Radio. We're around until 2 o'clock today, and we promise not to say the words Justin Schultz more than 20 times over the next 40 minutes or so. Lots going on. There, Josh Green just tweeted, I want to let everybody know that I'm down to 30 teams that I will play for next year in the National Hockey League. That cracked me up. That's very good. The latest word we have is that there were seven teams, including a mystery club that he was talking to, and pulled out first were Toronto, New York Rangers, and Vancouver. Thanks for coming. We believe Edmonton, Ottawa, Minnesota, and the mystery team are involved, but honestly, the situation is fluid and we're just not sure. So we'll give you updates as they come, but that's the latest. 125 now, joined by my friend Cam Charron from Leaf Nation. How are you, buddy?
Hello.
Are you doing well?
I'm doing well. I'm staying inside on a pretty nice day, just reading Justin Schultz information.
Isn't it funny? I think it's like Canada has stopped. And everybody's just reading Twitter, right?
And I'm not sure how he nailed his last two teams to be Edmonton and Ottawa. I'm not sure if that's, you know, I know that that's the story as it is right now. Not 100% sold on what his teams were beforehand, but they just seem like two pretty odd choices for the no disrespect to the many fine listeners in Edmonton right now.
Well, the teams that we know that are out, and I mean, I've read that the Ottawa and Toronto are Ottawa and Edmonton are the final two, but that's nobody's got any concrete information saying that's so. But the teams that are apparently out, courtesy Bob McKenzie and other folks tweeting, are the Rangers, Vancouver, and Toronto, and those would have been, I would think, going in three of the more obvious choices.
Yeah, and you know they're certainly not. I don't think that that Vancouver or New York could offer him, you know, top 4 minutes at the start of the season. If Toronto didn't think that they could, then I don't know what I don't know what Toronto's strategy would be there, because they certainly need another top 4 guy. And he apparently played a lot with Jake Gardner in his college career. So we'll see where the chips fall, but. Yeah, it just looks to be, if he chooses Edmonton, that's just such a good coup for the Oilers, and something that they couldn't have absolutely planned at all, and just a lucky stroke, and hopefully they can, you know, sort of rally around that and, you know, get a good player out of it.
One of the few times in NHL history that having a defense that needs a lot of work is an advantage, I guess.
Yeah, it's a really odd situation. I've never seen it like this before, and a lot of people have said, oh well, you know, they've compared him to Fabian Brunstrom or other big names coming over from Europe, but you know, Schultz was a pretty high draft pick a few years ago, and he just never signed. So I don't agree with those comparisons.
What about the you know, we heard about the Jake Gardner connection, and I you know, like FNUF, the Leafs have some talent there on the blue line, but even if they were to acquire Schultz and then move somebody out, that's a possibility too. Somebody like Carl Gunnarsson, something along those lines. What about Toronto now that situation is over with in regard to Schultz? What about Toronto's roster needs to be addressed? Is it goaltending and defense, or where do you see them adding here over the next few days?
Well, from Brian Burke's comments, it doesn't sound like he really wants to add too much to the goaltending, because the price is just going to be so high. And I think I can kind of agree with him on that scenario. And I'm pretty well against overpaying for goaltending. And who Toronto have right now, James Reimer, Ben Scrivens, they're just two really cheap guys, and both might be a starter in the NHL, good enough to be a starter in the NHL. And this and the team they have up front just isn't good enough to make you think, oh, well, we definitely need a goalie to bring it all together. I just think it's a needless risk for 1 year. Maybe next year if they're, you know, if the market shapes up a little bit better. So it makes me think he's going to be going after a defenseman. And today he's in the process of buying out Colby Armstrong, which opens up a little bit of cap room. And maybe there's room there for the Leafs to take, you know, a shot at Jason Garrison or a Matt Carl or someone to really fill in on that top four. Because right now they have Dion Phaneuf, Carl Gunnarsson, Jake Gardner, and John Michael Lyles, Mike Komisarek, and Cody France are sort of your bottom pairing guys. So they definitely need another top four guy. And I think that's going to be the one that they address sort of right off the hop. They might not get the right guy, but I think that they're going to try and fix that first.
They did acquire at the draft a player that we in Edmonton saw during the WHL playoffs, and most observers believed, in terms of offense, he has the most potential among the high-end defensemen in the draft, Morgan Rielly. What's the reaction of Leafs fans, Western Canadian kid, maybe not as famous as some of the other guys because of injury, to that selection at number five overall?
Well, they all wanted a forward out here. And I can understand that. I think taking forwards is the safest bet, particularly centermen. But you have to think that there's a reason why guys like Philip Forsberg and Mikhail Grigorenko were passed over by so many other teams. And you know, I'm wondering how held in regard those teams saw those elite forwards. So Galchenyuk and Yakubov were off the board, of course, and it's funny with the way that Burke was treating the pick. He said, "Oh well, Morgan Rielly was the number one guy on our draft list," and their director of scouting sort of put that comment in perspective. At the end of the day, said, "Well, he was high, but I wasn't sure that he'd be first on our list." And the last time that the Leafs took a WHL defenseman fifth overall, it didn't really work out a lot well, and they moved Luke Shen out at the end of the weekend. And WHL is so hard to follow, even if you're out west, because the games are so rarely televised. You have to really be at the rink pretty well every home game to get a good read on, you know, pretty much anybody in that league, because it's so little of it is available. And out in Ontario, it's, you know, you just don't know anything about the guy except that he was injured all year. But from everything I know, he was, you know, he's a guy with a really high ceiling. But I didn't really even bother including him in the draft review, because I didn't think that there was any chance that the Leafs would go in that direction because of his injury. So he's a guy with a really high ceiling that nobody really knows too much about. So that does frustrate a few fans out here who were looking for a forward. But I think the more that's coming out about him, the more that they're warming up to the pick. And certainly they got another guy who could have been gone in the first round, Matt Finn, in the second round. And so they really did like Burke's second day.
Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, I'm going to be talking to Andrei Osadchenko, who has insight into the Russian players, and specifically had an interview with Igor Larionov for the draft. In that article, Igor Larionov, he talked about the Leafs maybe being in play for number one overall. And I'm wondering, during the period of time around the draft, and I know you're there, did you hear any rumors about Toronto trading up or down, or were those all just internet or rumors that were out there, maybe passed along?
Well, they all said the right things. I don't think that there was really much talk of teams moving up or down from those top positions, and they all said the same things, that the right deal wasn't there on the table for us, so we decided to keep our pick. And it's funny looking at that comment in retrospect. And it's something that I wish I had the chance to speak to Brian Burke about, because it just seems like a really odd thing for Larionov to say, and whether he was just trying to, you know, get some good value for the two guys that he represented going into the draft. And certainly they were picked one, number one and number three overall. So if that was the strategy, it worked out well for them.
A few Oiler fans are passing along questions for me, and one of them is with regard to Colby Armstrong. He's a very popular player for Oiler fans and NHL fans, but he obviously has had some injury problems, and his secondary underlying numbers were not strong. What was the story with him? Was it injury? Was it not being used? Is he a player that maybe injuries are overtaking his career, or where is he right now?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. When his underlying numbers were abysmal in Toronto, but I think a lot of that is due to the injuries. He played 79 games over 2 years, and he missed 85 due to injury. And certainly, and it's not just one recurring injury that he has to live with, but they're all over the place. There's a finger injury, an ankle injury. There was a concussion issue. It's sort of everything that could have gone wrong for Colby Armstrong did go wrong. You have to hope for the guy, because he's a very good guy from all accounts, and you have to hope that eventually he's gonna, you know, everything's gonna fall into place for him. He'll get a second chance in the NHL. But the money that Toronto gave to him was just too much in the first place, and it was just the thing that they had to do. I don't think that Colby Armstrong is as bad of a hockey player as he showcased in the last 2 years, but he was really a victim of circumstance there. And time will tell for the future, because he had pretty good underlying numbers in Atlanta, not so good in Toronto with all his injuries. So if they can get him, you know, if a team can get him healthy and on cheap, you know, he could be a pretty good addition as a third liner somewhere.
For Leaf fans, and there's a lot of them out here, no doubt, and listening online too, I'm sure, what can they possibly expect from the Leafs over the next 72 hours in free agency and via trades? Is it going to be active, or do you think it'll be a matter of tweaking here and there?
I think that Burke is going to be active. I don't think that he's going to be active as regard to signing, impact players. The other rumor is that there was supposed to be a secondary trade, or a second trade after the Luke Shen JVR deal. But that hasn't come yet. So people are still sort of waiting for that. And Burke has said that he's going to be active. He's going to kick some tires on July 1st. Maybe not on the key impact guys, so not on the Suitors or the Parises, but there's a lot of talk about him going after more depth players. And certainly, you have a spot opening for forward with Colby Armstrong out of the lineup, and you have six defensemen under contract, so you have to think that there's certainly a roster spot and a bit of money available for Burke to throw at somebody. But I don't think he's going to stay certainly going to stay out of the impact player market. But there was talk about Travis Moen, and then he re-upped with Montreal, and there was talk of. So now the big one here is Brandon Prust. And I think a lot of Leafs fans just don't really want Brian Burke to do too much in the next 72 hours. The story on him throughout his career as a manager is that he's really good on trades, but he just can't get the right signings down. And, he'll value the wrong thing in free agency, and it comes back to bite his team a little bit later on, because he identifies the wrong problems with the team to fix, as evidenced by how rough his tenure has been in Toronto, and he'd be the first to admit it.
Does he overpay for truculence on free agent day?
Truculence, pugnacity, belligerence, and testosterone, I think, are his major words. And he hasn't, and you look at the Leafs forwards, and they aren't even all that truculent you still have a lot of guys who are really small and don't hit all that hard, and the best forwards that he has have all come he either inherited or they came in a trade. Mikhail Grabowski and Phil Kessel or Joffrey Lupo, and he hasn't signed that really high impact guy who's been great on a third or fourth line. The one guy that they have in that depth role is Dave Steckel, who he acquired in a trade last training camp. And when he makes those types of moves, they usually work out for the Leafs. Every single guy on the team acquired in a trade has seemed, they've really seemed to fit on their spot, whether it's Jake Gardner or Dion Phaneuf or Phil Kessel. But it's just all the depth guys. He can't really tweak that roster together. He's sort of the reverse Steve Tampolini in that regard.
Is I know it's not sexy, but is the kind of thing Leaf fans might want to see is somebody like Matt Fratton coming in and playing, you know, fourth line, some third line right wing. I know it's not, you know, hey, oh, wow, big news, but he's a guy who's got a little bit of grit and he seems to be able to play at the NHL level. He's not expensive and he's a guy who might have an opportunity here.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's upsetting with the way that they've had, you know, Tim Connolly and Matt Lombardi. I guess Lombardi's a guy that they acquired through trade who didn't work out. But they're taking up spots on the third line that I think a lot of Toronto fans want to see given to Nazem Kadri. And Kadri's been, you know, he's been around for a few years now, and he hasn't landed in the NHL spot yet. And I never really realized it before actually moving here, but there's a lot of anxiety going around about Kadri. And him and Fratton, I think, would be a good third line because, like you say, they're really cheap. And Fratton's a big guy, and he's had some success scoring goals in a secondary role wherever he's gone. I think that he's probably going to be in the NHL at some point. I think him and Kadri would be a very excellent third line, taking sheltered minutes. But there's just no space for them on the roster right now.
Right.
And I think a lot of Leafs fans would want to see Kadri in the NHL full-time just because he came in with so much hype and scored a lot of goals in junior. And he's also a victim of circumstances, just too many roster spots being eaten up there and the depth roles, and he hasn't gotten his full chance yet.
What about Crabbe? I heard he was going to go free agency. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the story today, broken by James Myrtle. That apparently he's not going to re-up with the Leafs, and you know he's a capable enough guy, and I'm sure that he'll score, you know, 15 goals with some team next year, and everyone in Toronto will get extremely antsy about that. But you know, sometimes guys find the right situations, and it really wasn't there for Crabbe here because there's five top four wingers in Toronto right now and only four spots, and Crabbe just couldn't stick.
All right, good stuff. Now, before I let you go, and I was going to ask this at the top and I forgot, Luongo's out in Toronto, not going to happen?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think that Mike Gillis really wants to get a value trade for Luongo,
mm-hmm.
and Burke has, you know, he's pretty well said that he doesn't really want to give up anything to get a goalie. So it's just a trade that you don't see working, and the two were kind of taking shots at each other via at the draft, and if Florida has opened up as an opportunity, I think that the Canucks and Panthers, who have had a lot of trading history, not just recently, but you know, you look 10 years ago, the Pavel Bure deal, the original Luongo deal, they've just been trading partners for eternity, it seems, and that I think that that's the better fit for not only for Luongo, but also just from the teams and their familiarity with each other.
Cam, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Alan.
All right. Cam Charron from Leafs Nation and also NHL Numbers. Brilliant guy. And he was at the NHL draft, passed along some great stuff on the Leafs. And we talked about Justin Schultz at the top. Connor, I want to make sure I got this right. It's Minnesota is out now, and that's according to Michael Russo?
Yeah, that's okay. Been reported. So.
So now it's Edmonton, Ottawa, and the mystery team left. This is
Moscow or something.
Minsk is my vote. 1:43. We're here until 2 o'clock. Jungle Jim Hunter, by the way, is on at 2 until 4 o'clock. And then our good friend Jeff Kreshel from the Crush Health Show will be around at 4 o'clock this afternoon on Team 1260. This is Nation Radio, brought to you by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
What whatever you want to say. White smoke from the Sistine Chapel, whatever you want to say. Justin Schultz is signed with the Edmonton Oilers. Oilers tweeting out just about 1 minute ago. Edmonton Oilers have agreed to terms with Justin Schultz. More details to come. Wow. That is an amazing result. And I know that early on, Edmonton was mentioned as being, you know, a strong contender, and there was some surprise. Vancouver was likely the destination that people talked about, and then Toronto and the Rangers being the major urban centers, and obviously it was held in Toronto. And we got word later in the week that the Oilers had done a spectacular job, including Coffey and Gretzky and, you know, every other individual with the kitchen sink. But for them to get Justin Schultz is a major item. And now, as Terry Jones mentioned during our interview earlier in this hour, this looks like, you know, like we're talking about horseshoes of a major, major item here, because the Edmonton Oilers took the best player available at number one overall in the right winger from Russia in Yakupov, and passed on trading down possibly and picking up some picks and a defenseman who they could possibly slide in Ryan Murray right away. And when you do that, you're not addressing need, which you should never do in a draft, but it was very tempting. Now you've got the high scorer from the OHL and Sarnia and Neil Yakupov, and you've signed Justin Schultz out of Wisconsin, and an opportunity to slide him into the top four. The defensive depth chart now looks so much better. We talked about it this morning. Ladislav Smead, Jeff Petrie, Nick Schultz, Ryan Whitney, Justin Schultz, and Andy Sutton along with Theo Peckham. I wonder if they'll make another move. There were rumors earlier in the week about Mark Streit. He might, you know, be an addition for power play. Maybe Schultz is what they want to go with, and they'll add a more defensive-minded player. But that's a major item, a huge deal in front of July 1st, and I dare say that I don't think that there's going to be a lot of opportunity to do anything bigger than that this July 1st and maybe next July 1st, because the Edmonton Oilers now defensively, depth-wise, look outstanding. This is a team that has Oscar Klefbom on the way, Martin Marincin on the way, young Martin Gernat, who played here, is coming. David Musil signed earlier today by the Edmonton Oilers. They drafted a 20-year-old out of the Swedish leagues at the draft last weekend. They've got guys coming along, Colton Tubert, who they traded for. There's lots of talent and depth, but nobody who was necessarily readily available right now to come to the National Hockey League, and they solved that or covered that off with what was sort of a one-off. One doubts that this is going to happen anytime soon, a one-off opportunity to grab Justin Schultz via free agency. And if you're just tuning in, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, from the Edmonton Oilers, they've agreed to terms with Justin Schultz. We also have confirmation from Ryan Rashog and Dustin Nielsen and various other personalities from Team 1260. So it has definitely happened. The Edmonton Oilers have done it. They have signed Justin Schultz. And that happened just a few minutes ago. So excitement reigns for Edmonton Oilers fans. This is your July 1st celebration. The Edmonton Oilers put it through everything at them, the kitchen sink, and they won the day with Justin Schultz. Joined now by Andrei Osajenko from the Oilers Nation and various nation sites. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I wanted to just get initially your reaction to the Oilers signing Justin Schultz and winning something of a lottery with the other, I guess, seven teams involved.
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't cover the NCAA, so I know very little about Justin Schultz, but his numbers look good, and to me it looks like everybody's on Twitter and newspapers, and basically everybody who follows hockey is excited about it, so it must be good.
What you do very well, and that's follow Russian prospects, and you have a pipeline to some very important and big names, specifically this year's draft. Your interview with Igor Larionov with regard to Yakupov, Galchenyuk, and others was fascinating, an interesting piece. What was it like to talk to Larionov about those players and find out some inside information as you did?
Well, it was a dream come true, honestly, because Igor Larionov was one of my favorite players growing up. So, you know, I really enjoyed having a conversation with him. And, well, a lot of people told me that he's down-to-earth kind of guy, and that's what he turned out to be. So we had a great conversation for about 30 minutes before he watched his son play hockey. And, yeah, I was just really interested in what he had to say about, you know, what made him to become Yakupov's agent, because you don't expect a guy like Igor Larionov, the Hockey Hall of Famer, to be in a hockey agency, right? So I think the fact that Larionov, with all of his character traits, became Yakupov's agent tells you a whole story about what kind of person Yakupov is.
You wrote another article with Yakupov on the 12th of June. I found it to be an absolute eye-opener, and for somebody who hasn't read it, I recommend it. It's called Neil Yakupov on Being a Muslim, Don Cherry, the Draft Combine, and Playing in Canada. And the one thing that really came through to me is how little we really know as Canadians, maybe about the area of the world that he lives in.
Well, he was, this is exactly why it became newsworthy, because he tried to explain, he tried to make a joke, because there's two words in Russian, one meaning Russian as ethnicity, and one, just a guy who lives in Russia. But there's only one word in English language for this, which is Russian. So Yakupov was trying to make a joke that you shouldn't, because he was so fed up with all the questions about him, maybe leaving to Russia. So he tried to make a joke saying that he's not Russian, he's Tatar, but nobody understood who Tatars are. So he said, well, I'm a Tatar. I'm of this ethnicity. We have this region and we're Muslims. So reporters picked the only word they understood, I believe, which was Muslims. And he came across saying, I'm not Russian, I'm Muslim, which created all sorts of confusion.
Well, and I recommend anybody who has not read your article to go to the Oilers Nation site, because it really is fascinating. And what we found out, Andre, since then is that he's a very engaging young man. He's very funny, and he does well with people, and he's got a very quick mind.
Yes. I don't know how well it translates into English when he speaks for himself, but, I mean, if you even notice that, that must be good. But in Russian, he's just an absolute gold mine, should I say, of an interview.
Sounds good. You know what? Our time is tight, and I apologize with the Schultz situation. May I have you back in the next week or so, Andre?
Sure.
Okay, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
That's and I do apologize for not giving him more time, but that's Andre Osajenko, and he's from Oilers Nation, and you can catch him on all kinds of things with regard to the Russian kids, including Neil Yakupov on the Oilers Nation site. Justin Schultz signed with the Edmonton Oilers and did it in a very nice, timely fashion, so we could wrap it up as part of the package, which I really appreciate. And so I want to thank my guest, Andre Osajenko. We also had Kent Wilson on the show, Terry Jones, and Tom Lynn, and this was an absolutely spectacular day. Thank you so much. Connor, welcome back from Vegas. I understand you won a couple hundred grand. Good for you, so enjoy that. Have a great long weekend, everybody. Woohoo! Edmonton Oilers signed Justin Schultz. If you're a fan, this is a good day.